Good morning, good people. Welcome back to Love Babs Love Talk on Babs Rolls Ivy. I've got Caroline Novo from the Justice Collaboratory in the house this morning, and she's going to be talking about, well, what is the Collaboratory at Yale Law School, and two, The Notebook, and not the film, but this this scholarly work of artistic expression around the criminal justice system. Am I correct when saying that?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. Are we done? That was perfect.
I loved it. All right, so welcome, Caroline Noble. I don't think we've met in real life.
You know, maybe we've run into each other at some events, but thank you for having me today, and thank you for always enthusiastically supporting the Justice Collaboratory and the work we do and our group. We're big fans, and we're always happy to be on with you. So thanks for having me.
Well, thank you. All right, so Caroline, tell us, what is the collaboratory? And because
yes.
I love that name. I love saying it.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes you have to make up a word to capture something unique. So we went for it, right?
I love it.
So the Justice Collaboratory, or you can just say the JC, which is a little easier. So we're housed within Yale Law School. We were founded by two professors at the law school, Tracy Mears and Tom Tyler, about a decade ago. And we bring together nationally recognized academics, researchers, social scientists who are passionately committed to building a more just, effective, democratic criminal legal system.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a small goal, you know, it's just no big deal. And, you know, the only other thing I'll add about us is that we really try and come at these topics from an interdisciplinary angle. So we're not just lawyers. I'm a criminologist, but we have people representing law, but we also have historians, medical doctors, artists, philosophy, management, psychology, you know, nearly every discipline. And we work with anything that sort of intersects with impacts and the criminal legal system.
Wow. I mean, that's like the Justice League, right?
You know, it's so funny you say that. My sister tells a story that when she came to my graduate school graduation, she said, "Did I just come to superhero graduation? Like what just happened?" So yeah.
That's what makes me think with all those moving parts and people and players.
Well, you know, I think it's really important. You know, we've tried to create a place where we can learn from each other, mm-hmm. where we can advance public policies that are scientifically, you know, proven to build strong and safe and just communities. Like, we want communities where all citizens can thrive. And by having this diverse group of people in conversation with one another, it helps us move that conversation forward.
Okay. And you guys have been at this for like a decade. Okay. So you've seen some things, and you're probably seeing more things than you ever thought of you could imagine at this particular point in the game.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a bit of a wild ride these last 10 years as far as it comes to I think people have woken up a lot to these topics and are more engaged than ever in how to help, you know, build healthy, safe communities and hold our criminal justice system, our criminal legal system accountable, and ask for a more legitimate, more fair, more trustworthy system than they used to be. So it seems it's great for us because we feel like people are finally listening. And that's one of the reasons we decided to come up, which we'll talk about, this new publication that's a little more accessible, because we do understand that there's a wider appetite to engage in like a really meaningful conversation about these topics than maybe previously.
And so you're talking about the inaugural edition of The Notebook.
Yeah.
Right. And it's your take on an accessible and engaging publication dedicated to the themes that you care about: justice, safety, science, community, and vitality. I love the vitality piece, because that, to me, that speaks to humanity and how we are with each other. So maybe I'm wrong about that, but I like that thinking.
Well, listen, it's a word that invokes imagery, right? Like when you hear the term community vitality, like hopefully you have an image in your head of what that looks and feels like, right? Like maybe it's people walking around on a street or neighbors in conversation with one another. Like that's one of the reasons I love the word vitality, because it is really like evocative in different ways. The notebook, sometimes it's easier to talk about what the notebook is not, right? Like the notebook is not something you might typically see out of an Ivy League institution. It's not a dry academic journal written only by researchers. Not that there's anything wrong with that. We certainly make time to publish in, prestigious peer-reviewed journals as well, but we wanted to create something different. We wanted something that lived sort of between the space of an academic journal and also just like a popular magazine.
Okay.
Right. So like that's when we say accessible, that's what we mean. For those of us streaming, like, it's a hard copy. It's you can feel it, you can open it. It's supposed to be an experience that's a little different than just having to sit down and slog through a 70-page law review journal or something.
So when you decided to do this, you get it around the room, you get around a table, have some beer, some pizza, whatever it
Yeah,
is,
it's
and you
exactly what we
said, this is what I could, because I love these kinds of when people get together to brainstorm about how we're going to do this, and it's innovative. You bring on some of the best creative minds. What did you know you absolutely had to have in it? Like, what was the things that you knew that you're like, okay, we got to talk about this, and we got to talk about this, and we need somebody to write about this?
That's so interesting. That's a great question. And that, just so you know, Babs, you kind of nailed it. That's what we did. We got all of the members and the JC members and some staff together. And we were all in a big room, and we had an artist come and do visual note taking.
Oh.
And we just sort of brainstormed what would we want to see in there. And there were so many amazing ideas. And that meeting was, gosh, that was 2 years ago, that meeting, right? To just think about what we want. I mean, this has been a long time. So much intention and care went into the final version. So in that meeting, there was one thing that came out that we ended up doing, and I'm so proud of it. And it's at the very end of the notebook. It's the last entry, and it's called the glossary. And the glossary is basically our commitment to the thoughtful and deliberate use of language. Because it is so common when we talk about our criminal legal system to use outdated norms and phrases that set us back and perpetuate things that we're trying to grow past. So, for example, you'll notice I always say criminal legal system, not criminal justice system, because when we say justice, we're implying that our system is just. But it is a legal system, right? It is a set of laws that govern, and there's, incarceration and incapacitation, sentencing. It's not really about justice the way it's designed. It's about a set of legal rules. So that was one of the first things we said we wanted to do, is we wanted a glossary. So there's this, and it's another effort to make all of these articles readable. So you could be reading this and say, gosh, I've never heard the term adverse childhood experience. That feels a little over my understanding. You can go to the glossary, read a couple sentences, and maybe be able to move forward with a better grasp of the themes we're talking about in the articles. So I'm really proud of it. I think it's the first step in getting people on the same page to say, like, here are some terms, here are some words, make an effort to be thoughtful about how you use your language when you talk about, people who are incarcerated, people and who are impacted by the legal system, all of that.
I love that, because that's teaching, I think. That's teaching and re-educating people, because I think you're absolutely right, Caroline. People have these outdated old notions. I'm somebody who pays attention to language. I mean, I
Yeah,
run a
me too.
newspaper too, and I
Yeah,
talk.
right.
But I listen to how things are said and the ways in which they're said, and the ways in which words are used. And for me, and I know that sometimes that misses people, but I'm always conscious of language. And I love that you have a glossary so that people can, they can take it upon themselves to educate themselves or learn something. right? Because it's two different things. And I love that. So that sounds like an absolute. Appreciate
Yes.
that.
Yeah.
All right, so what else?
What else is in there? You want to know?
Yes.
Well, I'll tell you. And first of all, I want to say one of the things about putting the notebook together that was really cool. I mean, we talked about this word community vitality, and we wanted vitality to really represent something. And maybe to sort of understand the way all of these pieces fit together, we should talk about how I interpret and we as a group interpret this idea of community vitality, right? And I think sometimes the best way to understand community vitality is we first have to talk about the way we conceive of safety, especially in the United States, right? So like this conception of safety in the United States basically means the absence of harm, right? So we equate no harm, no crime, low arrest rates. That means you're safe. If there's the absence of harm, you're safe. And what we're trying to say is that safety is holistic. Safety is not just the absence of harm. Safety is the presence of good. Okay.
Whoa, Caroline, you're preaching, girl.
I feel really strongly about this, and this is why we're stuck in these patterns, is like we think we're going to get safe by arresting our way out of crime. It doesn't work that way. We have to be safe by providing, housing and shelter and quality education and access to healthcare and a criminal legal system that's legitimate. All of these goods build a safe, strong community, right? And a strong community is a safe community. A safe community is a vital community. So we wanted a collection of pieces, art, scholarly work, poetry that embodied what a vital community would feel like. So that you could read this and sort of envision, okay, like, yeah, there's some violence reduction efforts, but there's also other things like healthcare, that help you create this strong, safe community. So that's the underlying theme, right? Like that's the baseline. That's where we're starting, right? We have 18 pieces in the notebook, all centered around this theme of community vitality.
So did
And
you
then from
invite
there,
people? Did you
what?
invite people, Caroline? Like, did you invite people? Like, how did you
Yeah.
know who to invite? Did you send out a blanket invitation and whoever responded, or were you
Kind of.
purposeful and intentional?
I mean, we were a little more cheesy than that. We sent out a puzzle. I made a puzzle and then I took away one piece of the puzzle and I mailed out the puzzle and it said, "The notebook is coming together. You're the missing piece." I was really trying to get people. I really wanted people to do it. It was the first time.
You sound like a development director. I
I
like
know I
that.
should be, right? So how we solicited the pieces is, the way the collaboratory is structured is that we're members, right? So there's a group of members, some at Yale, but also other universities. We have members at Columbia and Barnard, at Johns Hopkins, at Colby, at Boston University. They're the core group. So we started by asking the members, would you like to contribute a piece to the notebook with the understanding it is a different medium to share your voice than what you've typically done? And it was a loud, enthusiastic yes, because they also felt like sometimes their ideas were trapped in the traditional modes of sharing academic scholarship and academic thought. Right. Their pieces are getting stuck behind journal paywalls, right? And so they were like, wow, I can write something that's going to be free, that's available to everyone, that's like accessible. So we started with the members. And we have 8 members who contributed pieces, which is great. Or so I guess 7 members wrote pieces. And then we have, a full-time staff that run the Justice Collaboratory, and 8 staff also contributed while
Wow.
simultaneously working on the production of this. So that was really meaningful to me that we had such a mix. And then it was just kind of word of mouth. We get emails sometimes from people. We had a couple contributors, 2 contributors who are currently residing in correctional facilities who have reached out to us about working with us that We're able to author and contribute pieces to the notebook. We have another author who was incarcerated at the time and then was released during the publication. His piece is fascinating. It's called Felony Finance by Neil Gallagher. Definitely check it out. So the range of contributors is really, really unique. We sort of have, there's something for everyone.
Oh, I love that. So how often do you think you're going to come out? Is this how often are you going to publish?
Well, I mean, that stresses me out even thinking about the next one because it hasn't even been 2 weeks. But no, it's going to be a continuing thing. You know, I would love to put it out every year. We try and pick a theme at the Collaboratory to center all of our work around. So right now our theme is community vitality. My guess is when we pick our next theme in a year, we'll do the next volume of the notebook on that theme. So
how do people get their hands on this? Like, do we have to come to the law school and pick it up? Like, how do I get a copy, Caroline?
You can. I'd love to give you a hard copy. So the best way to do it is to visit our website. Mm-hmm. And the notebook is free. It is a downloadable PDF. You can download the entire 200-page notebook, or you can download PDFs of each individual article. And our website, it's pretty easy to remember. It's called justicehappensheer.yale.edu.
Are y'all the stepchildren of the law school? Because I just feel like what y'all are just rogue out there.
Yeah, we are a little. No, we're. You know, that's funny you say that. We have so much support from the law school, and Dean Gerken is just always championing us and pushing us to talk about these subjects. So we're a tight crew for sure.
I mean, it doesn't sound like an Ivy League school would take on this level of engagement that's so out of the box, you know. Yeah. Like this is really a different kind of thinking about this system, this criminal legal system, and everything that touches it. This is a very different concept, I think.
I think so too. I agree. I think that you know, it's almost a good, like, you can compare the two things, right? Like, we're so set in our ways when it comes to sort of punishment and carceral logic in America, right? We really think that the answer to crime is to, like, punish people and scare people and intimidate them into following the rules. Like, there's this standard way of doing things. And we're really trying to push people to think beyond that, right? Like, and think, okay, like, we don't have to do things the way we've always been doing them. We can transform the entire system. We can have smart conversations about topics like abolition. We can do this in a way that doesn't have to polarize anyone, but instead engages people in a conversation. And, you know, I think academia is also an institution that is deeply, you know, rooted in traditional values and norms and typical ways of doing things. And it works so well a lot of the time. It really does, right? Like, it's allowed places like Yale to be shrines to learning and shrines to education. Like, that is so special that we have places like that in our country where people can just devote their lives to learning. I love it. It's special. And also, we need to break cycles and make sure we're engaging with wider audiences.
How do you push back, Caroline? I mean, I love this message. I love the idea of this. But, you know, the political climate is such at the moment, mm-hmm. that kind of would seem like an uphill. Like, how do you get in these spaces? You know, do you get in individual spaces and try to work from that place? Because the bigger spaces are a little toxic.
Yeah, you know, and I will say, I want to mention one piece in the notebook. Like, a lot of times when we talk about this work, and it can be hard to imagine how you maintain hope for change. There's a really wonderful piece in the notebook by Yale Law School faculty member Miriam Gohara and one of her clients, Richard Morales, who's currently incarcerated. And they talk about maintaining and excavating hope in this space that can feel really overwhelming. You know, Miriam's a clinical faculty, so she represents people in cases, right? Still, she's very much connected to the real world and the effects that these policies have on people's lives. So I would recommend everyone read that piece. It's very inspirational. There are original pieces of Richard's art and that he's done while incarcerated. It's very meaningful. You know, as far as how you do it, like I think there is also, even beyond the Justice Collaboratory, there are so many great centers, research organizations, advocates, community builders that are doing this work every day. Like, we really have created like a movement for social change and we have made progress. Like, even we're talking about language, Babs, like the term mass incarceration, like I don't think people even really were using that in day-to-day conversation that long ago, right? The fact that people want to talk about abolition, right, or want to at least understand what that means, like I do feel like we are making progress. It's not as fast as the science is telling us it could be, right? Like, you know, we really know what works in this space, and the policy and the politics of it are sort of holding us back. And that's the only thing that gets frustrating is like, we know better. We know better now. So when is it going to catch up to what all of us working in the field already know?
And so you, as a criminologist, what does that mean? Like, what do you do? And is this job the dream job for a criminologist?
Oh gosh, if you had asked me that when I was 22, I probably would have said no, but now it is for sure. So criminologist basically means that I'm a social scientist. I'm a sociologist, if you will, that focuses on crime, punishment, justice, these themes. And it's more about, I would say, the way people interact with each other versus, you know, a lawyer would focus very much on the law, or, someone who worked for a law enforcement agency might have a background in criminology, but they're using it in a different way. So, like, as a criminologist, I just try and sort of look at things like social cohesion and well-being from an angle that is specific to the way being you are impacted by the criminal justice, the criminal legal system.
And so the notebook seems like it could be found, it could be seen as accumulation of the work that you do. Like, this is like the cherry on top. Like, this is the way to think about this work. And here, let me show you how we let me let, here, take this and read it, and then it might give you a sense of how we could be in the world with each other around these matters.
I mean, absolutely. And I think one of the things that's special about the notebook is that there are so many different ways to take in these themes. So there are some longer, like I said, more scholarly articles, but there's also some beautiful poetry, right? There's beautiful poetry by Yale Law School faculty Monica Bell, where it's very cool. It's actually called empirical poetry. So she took interviews that she did with mothers, and then she pulled out words to make poetry about their experience from these qualitative interviews. And, you know, one of them is about a mother who loses her son to gun violence. You know, this is like this horrible human experience of grief, and then overlap that with the violence of it, and then to share that experience through poetry. You know, it resonates in a way that doesn't always resonate if you're just reading a news article. So, you know, she has another piece in there about, it's called Dirty House, talking about, you know, this fear that if your house is too messy, Child Protective Services are going to take your kids away. You know, and again, it's presented that visceral fear is presented through poetry. And both of those are in the notebook. So for a gut, again, for us, it was really about, yes, a collection of many things based on decades of work, right? These people have been working in these spaces for so long. And to be able to sort of put this research and personal reflection and poetry into something tangible Yeah, it feels like it definitely feels like we've accomplished something, as to your point.
But it sounds like too that is centered in an artistic scope, I think. That
Yeah.
you get folks like a Monica Bell, who's not known for artistic, I
Right.
mean, that's not her specialty, but to
Yeah.
have her step out and present some poetry, I mean, that's a whole different vibe right there. Like that, she gets to be seen in a different light. I mean, I
Yeah.
don't know her, but I'm just imagining that,
Yeah.
if you're a lawyerly academic and then you throw some poetry out there based on what you do, that's got to be pretty damn incredible.
Right. And I'm so emboldened by the contributors' willingness to put themselves out there in new ways. Like I don't want to speak for Monica, but I'm sure there's a tiny piece of Monica that's like, am I really gonna do this? Right? Like, am I really about to like write empirical poetry and like, it's very vulnerable. It's very vulnerable. And I think a lot of the contributors, they just get such a round of applause for sharing themselves in this way, which can be really, really intimidating.
Tell me about the artwork, the vitality, the Community Vitality 2023 oil colored pencil,
Yeah.
pastel, and gold leaf on paper. Like, tell me about that, because that's quite arresting, I think. Or beautiful. It's quite
Yeah, it is
beautiful.
beautiful. And it's supposed to be, and if people are watching, like here's a quick snippet of what it looks like.
See, it looks so beautiful in that. I'm just seeing it on my little screen,
Yeah.
but that looks beautiful in the book.
I'll get you a hard copy, Babs, if you don't have one.
I don't have one, and I want one,
Oh,
Carolyn.
okay. We'll definitely get you one. So I'm really glad you asked about the art because that was also something very intentional, which is that we wanted to commission original art to accompany the pieces. We ended up working with an artist named Chidinma Dorecki, and she did six original pieces, including the Community Vitality piece. She also did she did some original art to go with one of Monica's poems. And several other pieces. And Chinema really embraced this idea of having to come up with community vitality in art. And, she had to sort of be introspective about what that means to her, right? And you'll notice a lot of the colors again are vibrant. I'll say one of the conversations we had with Chi-Chi early on was about the color scheme, and also with our designer. We worked with an amazing designer, Greg Chase at YPPS, who did all of this work. And we noticed when we first started getting very, very early on, but we started getting like color palettes or some of the early art, that the color themes were sort of like depressing, right? They were like dark, and you know what it is? It's because we have this bias when we talk about when we talk about justice and safety, we immediately picture, a dark prison or something scary. And so, it was coming out in the color scheme, right? And we had to sort of recalibrate and say, no, we're talking about vitality here. We want the colors to be bright, to be lively. We want them to represent life, right? Not these negative conceptions we have of these topics. So it was a really great opportunity. Chinema was able to have conversations with the authors about the art. So
Wow.
yeah, it was really cool. So Neil Gallagher, who was formerly incarcerated, who wrote one of the pieces, he wrote about sort of the black market economy of prisons. It's really an amazing article. And Chinema wanted to paint a piece, but she'd never been in a prison. So they had to have this conversation about what they look like and what they feel like. And he was able to send some photos to her for reference. And then another piece, she did a portrait of two of our members, Veshla Weaver, Elizabeth Hinton, who did a phenomenal piece called Selective Hearing. I highly recommend everyone take time to read this. It's a conversation between the two of them. Chinema did, so she did a portrait of them. So she had to go on Zoom and meet them to then, paint them. It was a really collaborative experience, start to finish.
I love this intersection of art and academic and free talking. Like I think that's it's unheard of in a setting where
Yeah.
you are like that is just I would imagine hardcore academics are like, oh, never. But then there are some academics who are like, here's my chance to get a little freedom and to get a little, some of this out.
Well, I think that no one will ever look at a academic journal the same way after seeing this, right? It definitely leaves you wanting beautiful things like this, right?
Yes.
So.
I mean, you might set a term, you might get other academic journals or law journals to take a stab at least one
Yeah.
attempt at creating this kind of intersection of art and scholarship and all of that.
Well, I'm happy to talk to them if they're interested.
I think as it makes its rounds, Caroline, I think you might get a few calls about this.
I'm happy to talk. And I will say we've had just it's been heartwarming the enthusiastic support and engagement since we released it. Everyone is definitely taking the time to, understand what we're trying to present. And certainly having vibrant and spectacular art helps people to want to sit down and read it,
Yes. So before we go, because we're about to wrap up, what, if you can say, what was your favorite part of this whole experience? And do you have a favorite piece in this journal, in the notebook?
Wow. My favorite experience was, it's very rare that you get the opportunity to have a tiny idea and then see it move from a tiny idea all the way to a hard copy, something you can feel in your hands sitting on your desk. This idea came totally randomly out of a strategic planning process, right? We were doing a strategic plan and we thought we value science, we value impact, but we also value community building. We also value collaboration. Like, how do we do these two things? And we thought, well, what if we just made a publication that people could read and we could share with the wider audience? This was a tiny conversation we had in 2020. And so to see that evolution, that's been my favorite part. It's rare that we are given that gift, right? That we get to journey along from a tiny idea to completion. It's very fulfilling
I love it.
as a human.
Yeah.
And my favorite piece, oh, they're all really good.
I
I
know.
have to say, if I was going to encourage, they're wonderful, but if I was going to pick a couple of pieces for this audience to take some time to read, one great one is called Nothing About Us Without Us, which is,
Yes, FUBU.
which is focused on New Haven, and that's page 84 that has to do with a collaboration between Justice Collaboratory and some New Haven community members who joined our team as researchers. I know you've had some of them on the show before, Babs, to talk about this. That's an amazing piece. There's also a piece that would typically, I think, be really hard to read by BJ Casey, who is a neuroscientist, called The Seven Myths of the Adolescent Brain, where she breaks down some brain science. But again, there's some art to accompany it, and we've been able to sort of take this, confusing idea of brain science and make it accessible.
Oh, I
So I
love
would
it.
say those two at the start.
Thank you. Caroline, you can come back anytime you want and talk about anything you want because I've enjoyed this immensely. I can't wait to get my hands on the hard copy so I can pore over it. And I hope that it gets out to the wider community because I think this is a good step in the right direction and bringing us all together to talk about things that, have direct impact on our everyday practical lives.
I could not agree more. Thank you. Thank you again for having us. For having me and supporting the JC over the years. It means a lot.
I do. So come back anytime you want. If you got something else in the hopper, let me know. Come through.
I
Thank you, Caroline. And say hi to everybody over there at the Justice Collaboratory. I appreciate them very much.
You got it. Thank you. Have a good day.
All right. Take care. All right, Harry Droz, that is it for a fine Tuesday. I did a lot of talking today, and I've enjoyed every minute of it. I had two very distinctively different guests, and I've enjoyed both conversations immensely.